Shaul, a slave of the Messiah, Yeshua HaMashiach, an emissary, because I was called and set apart for the good news of Yahweh Elohim. Yahweh Elohim promised this good news in advance through his prophets in the Tanakh. It concerns his son. He is descended from David physically. He was powerfully demonstrated to be son of Elohim spiritually, set apart by his having been resurrected from the dead. He is Yeshua the HaMashiach. Through him, we receive grace and were given the work of being an emissary on his behalf, promoting trust, grounded obedience among all the Gentiles, including you, who have been called by Yeshua HaMashiach, the Messiah. 2. All those in Rome whom Yahweh Elohim loves, who have been called, who have been set apart for him, grace to you and shalom from Yahweh Elohim, our Father, and Yeshua HaMashiach. First, I thank my Elohim through Yeshua HaMashiach for all of you, because the report of your trust is spreading throughout the whole world. For Elohim, whom I serve in my spirit by spreading the good news about his son, is my witness that I regularly remember you in my prayers. And I always pray that somehow, now or in the future, I might by Yahweh Elohim's will succeed in coming to visit you. For I long to see you so that I might share with you some spiritual gift that can make you stronger. Or to put it another way, so that by my being with you, we might, through the faith we share, encourage one another. Brothers, I want you to know that although I have been prevented from visiting you until now, I have often planned to do so, in order that I might have some fruit among you, just as I have among the other Gentiles. I owe a debt to both civilized Greeks and uncivilized people, to both the educated and the ignorant. Therefore, I am eager to proclaim the good news among the good news also to you who live in Rome. For I am not ashamed of the good news, since it is Yahweh Elohim's powerful means of bringing salvation to everyone who keeps on trusting, to the Jews especially, but equally to the Gentiles. For in it is revealed how Yahweh Elohim makes people righteous in his sight. And from beginning to end, it is through trust, as the Tanakh puts it. But the person who is righteous will live his life by trust. What is revealed in Elohim's anger from heaven against all the godlessness and wickedness of people who in their wickedness keep suppressing the truth? Because what is known about Elohim is plain to them, since Elohim has made it plain to them. Forever, since the creation of the universe, his invisible qualities, both his eternal power and his divine nature, have been clearly seen, because they can be understood from what he has made. Therefore, they have no excuse, because although they know who is Elohim, they do not glorify him as Elohim or thank him. On the contrary, they have become futile in their thinking, and their discerning hearts have become darkened. Claiming to be wise, they have become fools. In fact, they have exchanged the glory of the immortal Yahweh Elohim for mere images, like a mortal human being, or like birds, animals, or reptiles. This is why Yahweh Elohim has given them up to the vileness of their hearts' lusts, to the shameful misuse of each other's bodies, They have exchanged the truth of Yahweh Elohim for falsehood by worshiping and serving created things rather than the Creator. Praised be He forever. So be it. Amen. This is why Yahweh Elohim has given them up to degrading passions, so that their women exchange natural sexual relations for unnatural, and likewise the men, giving up unnatural relations with the opposite sex, burn with passion for one another. Men committing shameful acts with other men and receiving in their own persons the penalty appropriate to their perversion. In other words, since they have not considered Yahweh Elohim worth knowing, Yahweh Elohim has given them up to worthless ways of thinking, so that they do improper things. They are filled with every kind of wickedness, evil, greed, and vice, stuffed with jealousy, murder, quarreling, dishonesty, and ill will. They are gossips, slanderers, haters of Yahweh Elohim. They are insolent, arrogant, and boastful. They plan evil schemes. They disobey their parents. They are brainless, faithless, heartless, and ruthless. They know well enough Yahweh Elohim's righteous decree that people who do such things deserve to die. Yet not only do they keep doing them, but they applaud others who do the same. Therefore, you have no excuse, whoever you are, passing judgment. For when you judge someone else, you are passing judgment against yourself, since you who are judging do the same things he does. We know that Yahweh Elohim's judgment lands impartially on those who do such things. Do you think that you, a mere man passing judgment on others who do such things, yet doing them yourself, will escape the judgment of Yahweh Elohim? Or perhaps you despise the riches of his kindness, forbearance, and patience, because you don't realize that Yahweh's kindness is intended to lead you to turn from your sins? But by your stubbornness, by your unrepentant heart, you are storing up anger for yourself on the day of anger, when Yahweh Elohim's righteous judgment will be revealed. For he will pay back each one according to his deeds. To those who seek glory, honor, and immortality by perseverance in doing good, he will pay back eternal life. But to those who are self-seeking, who disobey the truth and obey evil, he will pay back wrath and anger. Yes, he will pay back misery and anguish to every human being who does evil, to the Jew first, then to the Gentile. But glory and honor and shalom to everyone who keeps doing what is good, to the Jew first, then to the Gentile. For Yahweh Elohim does not show favoritism. All who have sinned outside the framework of Torah will die outside the framework of Torah. And all who have sinned within the framework of Torah will be judged by Torah. For it is not merely the hearers of Torah who Yahweh Elohim considers righteous. Rather, it is the doers of what Torah says who will be made righteous in Yahweh Elohim's sight. For whenever Gentiles who have no Torah do naturally what the Torah requires, then these, even though they don't have Torah for themselves, are Torah. For their lives show that the conduct the Torah dictates is written in their hearts. Their consciences also bear witness to this, for their conflicting thoughts sometimes accuse them and sometimes defend them on a day when Yahweh Elohim passes judgment on people's inmost secrets. According to the good news as I proclaim it, he does this through the Messiah, Yahshua HaMashiach. But if you call yourself a Jew and rest on Torah and boast about Yahweh and know his will and give your approval to what is right because you have been instructed from the Torah, and if you have persuaded yourself that you are a guide to the blind, a light in the darkness, an instructor for the spiritually unaware, and a teacher of children, since in the Torah you have the embodiment of knowledge and truth. Then you who teach others, don't you teach yourself? Preaching, thou shalt not steal. Do you steal? Saying, thou shalt not commit adultery. Do you commit adultery? Detesting idols, do you commit idolatrous acts? You who take such pride in Torah, do you, by disobeying the Torah, dishonor Yahweh? As it says in the Tanakh, for it is because of you that Yahweh's name is blasphemed by the Goyim. For circumcision is indeed of value if you do what Torah says. But if you are a transgressor of Torah, your circumcision has become uncircumcision. Therefore, if an uncircumcised man keeps the righteous requirements of the Torah, won't his uncircumcision be counted as circumcision? Indeed, the man who is physically uncircumcised but obeys the Torah will stand as a judgment on you who have had a Brit Milah and have Torah written out but violated. For the real Jew is not merely Jewish outwardly. True circumcision is not only external and physical. On the contrary, the real Jew is one inwardly, and true circumcision is of the heart, spiritual, not literal, so that his praise comes not from other people, but from Yahweh Elohim. Then what advantage has the Jew? What is the value of being circumcised? Much in every way. In the first place, the Jews were entrusted with the very words of Yahweh. If some of them were unfaithful, so what? Does their faithlessness cancel Yahweh's faithfulness? Heaven forbid. Yahweh would be true even if everyone were a liar. As the Tanakh says, so that you, Yahweh Elohim, may be proved right in your words and win the verdict when you are put on trial. Now, if our unrighteousness highlights Yahweh's righteousness, what should we say? That Yahweh is unrighteous to inflict his anger on us? I am speaking here the way people commonly do. Heaven forbid. Else, how could Yahweh judge the world? But you say, if through my lie, Yahweh's truth is enhanced and brings him greater glory, why am I still judged merely for being a sinner? Indeed, why not say, as some people slander us by claiming we do say, let us do evil so that good may come of it? Against them, the judgment is a just one. So are we Jews better off? Not entirely. For I have already made the charge that all people, Jews and Gentiles alike, are controlled by sin. As the Tanakh puts it, there is no one righteous, not even one. No one understands. No one sees Yahweh. All have turned away and at the same time become useless. There is no one who shows kindness, not a single one. Their throats are open graves. They use their tongues to deceive. Viper's venom is under their lips. Their mouths are full of curses and bitterness. Their feet rush to shed blood. In their ways are ruin and misery, and the ways of Shalom they do not know. There is no fear of Yahweh before their eyes. Moreover, we know that whatever the Torah says, it says to those living within the framework of the Torah, in order that every mouth may be stopped and the whole world be shown to deserve Yahweh's adverse judgment. For in his sight, no one alive will be considered righteous on the ground of legalistic observance of Torah commands. Because what Torah really does is show people how sinful they are. But now, quite apart from Torah, Yahweh's ways of making people righteous in His sight has been made clear. Although the Torah and the prophets give their witness to it as well, and it is a righteousness that comes from Yahweh through the faithfulness of Yeshua HaMashiach to all who continue trusting. For it makes no difference whether one is a Jew or a Gentile, since all have sinned and come short of earning Yahweh's praise. By Yahweh's grace, without earning it, all are granted the status of being considered righteous before Him. Through the act redeeming us from our enslavement to sin that was accomplished by the Messiah, Yeshua, Yahweh put Yeshua forward as the kapara for sin through His faithfulness in respect to His bloody sacrificial death. This vindicated Yahweh's righteousness, because in His forbearance He had passed over with neither punishment nor remission the sins people had committed in the past. And it vindicates His righteousness in the present age by showing that He is righteous Himself and is also the one who makes people righteous on the ground of Yeshua's faithfulness. So what room is left for boasting? None at all. What kind of Torah excludes it? One that has to do with legalistic observance of rules? No. Rather, a Torah that has to do with trusting. Therefore, we hold the view that a person comes to be considered righteous by Yahweh on the ground of trusting, which has nothing to do with legalistic observance of Torah commands. Or is it Yahweh, the Elohim of the Jews only? Isn't He also the Elohim of the Gentiles? Yes. He is indeed the Elohim of the Gentiles, because as you will admit, Yahweh is one. Therefore, He will consider righteous the circumcised of the ground of trust. He will consider righteous the circumcised on the ground of trusting, and the uncircumcised through that same trusting. Does it follow that we abolish Torah by His trusting? Heaven forbid. On the contrary, we confirm Torah. Then, what should we say? Abraham, our forefather, obtained by his own efforts. For if Abraham came to be considered righteous by Yahweh because of legalistic observances, then he has something to boast about. But this is not how it is before Elohim. For what does the Tanakh say? Abraham put his trust in Yahweh, and it was credited to his account as righteousness. Now the account of someone who is working is credited not on the ground of grace, but on the ground of what is owed him. However, in the case of one who is not working, but rather is trusting in Him who makes ungodly people righteous, his trust is credited to him as righteousness. In the same way, the blessing which David pronounces is on those whom Yahweh credits with righteousness apart from legalistic observances. Blessed are those whose transgressions are forgiven, whose sins are covered over. Blessed is the man whose sin Adonai will not reckon against his account. Now, is this blessing for the circumcised only, or is it also for the uncircumcised? For we say that Abraham's trust was credited to his account as righteousness. But what state was he in when it was so credited? Circumcision or uncircumcision? Not in circumcision, but in uncircumcision. In fact, he received circumcision as a sign, as a seal of the righteousness he had been credited with on the ground of the trust he had while he was still uncircumcised. This happened so that he could be the father of every uncircumcised person who trusts and thus has righteousness credited to him, and at the same time be the father of every circumcised person who not only has had a Brit Milah, but also follows in the footsteps of the trust which Abraham Avinu had when he was still uncircumcised. For the promise to Abraham and his seed that he would inherit the world do not come through legalism, but through the righteousness that trust produces. For if the heirs are produced by legalism, then trust is pointless and the promise worthless. For what law brings is punishment, but where there is no law, there is no violation. The reason the promise is based on trusting is so that it may come as Yahweh's free gift, a promise that can be relied on by all the seed, not only those who live within the framework of the Torah, but also those with the kind of trust Abraham had. Abraham Avinu for all of us. This accords with the Tanakh, where it says, I have appointed you to be a father to many nations. Abraham is our father in Yahweh's sight because he trusted Yahweh as the one who gives life to the dead and calls non-existent things into existence. For he was past hope, yet in hope he trusted that he would indeed become a father to many nations in keeping with what he had been told, so many will your seed be. His trust did not waver when he considered his own body, which was as good as dead since he was about 100 years old, or when he considered that Sarah's womb was dead too. He did not, by lack of trust, decide against Yahweh's promises. On the contrary, by trust, he was given power as he gave glory to Yahweh. For he was fully convinced that what Yahweh had promised, he could also accomplish. This is why it was credited to his account as righteousness. But the words, "it was credited to his account," were not written for him only. They were written also for us, who will certainly have our account credited too, because we have trusted in him who raised Yeshua HaMashiach from the dead. Yeshua, who was delivered to death because of our offenses and raised to life in order to make us righteous. So since we have come to be considered righteous by Yahweh because of our trust, let us consider to have shalom with Yahweh through our Yeshua HaMashiach, the Messiah. Also, through him and on the ground of our trust, we have gained access to this grace in which we stand. So let us boast about the hope of experiencing Yahweh's glory. But not only that, let us also boast in our troubles, because we know that trouble produces endurance. Endurance produces character, and character produces hope, and this hope does not let us down, because Yahweh's love for us has already been poured out in our hearts through the Ruach HaKodesh, who has been given to us. For while we were still helpless, at the right time, the Messiah died on behalf of ungodly people. Now it is a rare event when someone gives up his life, even for the sake of somebody righteous, although possibly for a truly good person, one might have the courage to die. But Yahweh demonstrates his own love for us in that the Messiah died on our behalf while we were still sinners. Therefore, since we have now come to be considered righteous by means of his bloody sacrificial death, how much more will we be delivered through him from the anger of God's judgment. For if we were reconciled with Yahweh through his son's death, when we were enemies, how much more will we be delivered by his life now that we are reconciled? And not only will we be delivered in the future, but we are boasting about Yahweh right now because he has acted through our Yeshua HaMashiach, through whom we have already received that reconciliation. Here is how it works. It was through one individual that sin entered the world, and through sin, death. And in this way, death passed through to the whole human race, inasmuch as everyone sinned. Sin was indeed present in the world through Torah before. Sin was indeed present in the world before Torah was given. But sin is not counted as such when there is no Torah. Nevertheless, death ruled from Adam until Moshe, even over those whose sinning was not exactly like Adam's violation of a direct command. In this, Adam prefigured the one who was to come. But the free gift is not like the offense. For if, because of one man's offense, many died, then how much more has Yahweh's grace, that is, the gracious gift of one man, Yeshua, the Messiah, overflowed to many? No, the free gift is not like what resulted from one man sinning. For from one sinner came judgment that brought condemnation. But the free gift came after many offenses and brought acquittal. For if, because of the offense of one man, death ruled through that one man, how much more will those receiving the overflowing grace, that is, the gift being considered righteous, rule in life through the one man, Yeshua HaMashiach, the Messiah? In other words, just as it was through one offense that all people came under condemnation, so also it is through one righteous act that all people come to be considered righteous. For just as through the disobedience of the one man, many were made sinners, so also through the obedience of the other man, many will be made righteous. And the Torah came into the picture so that the offense would proliferate. But where sin proliferated, grace proliferated even more. All this happened so that just as sin ruled by means of death, so also grace might rule through causing people to be considered righteous, so that they might have eternal life through Yeshua HaMashiach, the Messiah. So then, are we to say, let's keep on sinning so that there can be more grace? Heaven forbid. How can we, who have died to sin, still live in it? Don't you know that those of us who have been immersed into the Messiah, Yeshua, have been immersed into his death? Through immersion into his death, we were buried with him. So that just as through the glory of the Father, the Messiah was raised from the dead, likewise, we too might live a new life. For we have been united with him in a death like his. We will also be united with him in a resurrection like his. We know that our old self was put to death on the execution stake with him, so that the entire body of our sinful propensities might be destroyed, and we might no longer be enslaved to it. For someone who has died has been cleared from sin. Now, since we died with the Messiah, we trust that we will also live with him. We know that the Messiah has been raised from the dead, never to die again. Death has no authority over him, for his death was a unique event that need not be repeated. For his death was a unique event that need not be repeated. But his life, he keeps on living for Yahweh. In the same way, consider yourselves to be dead to sin, but alive for Yahweh by your union with the Messiah, Yeshua. Therefore, do not let sin rule in your mortal bodies so that it makes you obey its desires. Do not offer any part of yourselves to sin as an instrument for wickedness. On the contrary, offer yourselves to Yahweh as people alive from the dead, and your various parts to Yahweh as instruments for righteousness. For sin will not have authority over you, because you are not under legalism, but under grace. Therefore, what conclusion should we reach? Let's go on sinning because we're not under legalism, but under grace? Heaven forbid! Don't you know that if you present yourselves to someone as obedient slaves, then of the one whom you are obeying, you are slaves, whether of sin, which leads to death, or of obedience, which leads to being made righteous? By Yahweh's grace, you who were once slaves to sin obeyed from your heart the pattern of teaching to which you were exposed. And after you had been set free from sin, you became enslaved to righteousness. I am using popular language because your human nature is so weak. For just as you used to offer your various parts as slaves to impurity and lawlessness, which led to more lawlessness, so now offer your various parts as slaves to righteousness, which leads to being made holy, set apart for Yahweh. For when you were slaves to sin, you were free in relationship to righteousness. But what benefit did you derive from the things of which you are now ashamed? The end result of those things was death. However, now, freed from sin and enslaved to Yahweh, you do get the benefit. It consists in being made holy, set apart for Yahweh, and its end results in eternal life. For what one earns from sin is death, but eternal life is what one receives as a free gift from Yahweh in union with the Messiah, Yeshua, HaMashiach, our Messiah. Surely you know, brothers, for I am speaking to those who understand Torah, that the Torah has authority over a person only so long as he lives. For example, a married woman is bound by Torah to her husband while he lives. But if the husband dies, she is released from the part of the Torah that deals with husbands. Therefore, while the husband is alive, she will be called an adulteress if she marries another man. But if the husband dies, she is free from the part of the Torah, so that if she marries another man, she is not an adulteress. Thus, my brothers, you have been made dead with regard to the Torah through the Messiah's body, so that you may belong to someone else, namely the one who has been raised from the dead, in order for us to bear fruit for Yahweh Elohim. For when we were living according to our old nature, the passions connected with sins worked through the Torah in our various parts, with the result that we bore fruit for death. But now we have been released from this aspect of the Torah, because we have died to that which had us in its clutches, so that we are serving in the new way provided by the Spirit, and not in the old way of outwardly following the letter of the law. Therefore, what are we to say? That the Torah is sinful? Heaven forbid. Rather, the function of the Torah was that without it, I would not have known what sin is. For example, I would not have become conscious of what greed is if the Torah had not said, "Thou shalt not covet." But sin, seizing the opportunity afforded by the commandment, worked in me all kinds of evil desires. For apart from Torah, sin is dead. I was once alive outside the framework of Torah. But when the commandment really encountered me, sin sprang to life and I died. The commandment that was intended to bring me life was found to be bringing me death. For sin, seizing the opportunity afforded by the commandment, deceived me, and through the commandment, sin killed me. So the Torah is holy. That is, the commandment is holy, just, and good. Then did something good become for me the source of death? Heaven forbid. Rather, it was sin working death in me through something good, so that sin might be clearly exposed as sin, so that sin through the commandment might come to be experienced as sinful beyond measure. For we know that the Torah is of the Spirit. For we know that the Torah is of the Spirit. But as for me, I am bound to the old nature, sold to sin as a slave. I don't understand my own behavior. I don't do what I want to do. Instead, I do the very thing I hate. Now, if I am doing what I don't want to do, I am agreeing that the Torah is good. But now it is no longer the real me doing it, but the sin housed inside me. For I know that there is nothing good housed inside me, that is inside my old nature. I can want what is good, but I can't do it. For I don't do the good I want. Instead, the evil that I don't want is what I do. But if I am doing what the real me doesn't want, it is no longer the real me doing it, but the sin housed inside me. So I find it to the rule. A kind of perverse Torah. That although I want to do what is good, evil is right there with me. For in my inner self, I completely agree with Yahweh's Torah. But in my various parts, I see a different Torah. One that battles with the Torah in my mind and makes me a prisoner of sin's Torah, which is operating in my various parts. What a miserable creature I am. Who will rescue me from this body bound for death? Thanks be to Yahweh, He will, through Yahshua HaMashiach, the Messiah. To sum up, with my mind, I am a slave of Yahweh's Torah, but with my old nature, I am a slave of sin's Torah. Therefore, there is no longer any condemnation awaiting those who are in union with the Messiah, Yahshua. Why? Because the Torah of the Spirit, which produces this life in union with Messiah, Yahshua, HaMashiach, has set me free from the Torah of sin and death. For what the Torah could not do by itself, because it lacked the power to make the old nature cooperate, Yahweh did by sending His own Son as a human being with a nature like our own sinful one, but without sin. Yahweh did this in order to deal with sin, and in so doing, He executed the punishment against sin in human nature, so that the just requirement of the Torah might be fulfilled in us who do not run our lives according to what our old nature wants, but according to what the Spirit wants. For those who identify with their old nature set their minds on the things of the old nature, but those who identify with the Spirit set their minds on the things of the Spirit. Having one's mind controlled by the old nature is death, but having one's mind controlled by the Spirit is life and shalom. For the mind controlled by the old nature is hostile towards Yahweh, because it does not submit itself to Yahweh's Torah. Indeed, it cannot. Thus, those who identify with their old nature cannot please Yahweh. But you do not identify with your old nature, but with the Spirit, provided the Spirit of Yahweh is living inside you. For anyone who doesn't have the Spirit of the Messiah doesn't belong to Him. However, if the Messiah is in you, then on the one hand, the body is dead because of sin. But on the other hand, the Spirit is giving life because Yahweh considers you righteous. And if the Spirit of the one who raised Yeshua from the dead is living in you, then the one who raised the Messiah, Yahshua HaMashiach, from the dead will also give life to your mortal bodies through His Spirit living in you. So then, brothers, We don't owe a thing to our old nature that would require us to live according to our old nature. For if you live according to your old nature, you will certainly die. But if by the Spirit you keep putting to death the practices of the body, you will live. All who are led by Yahweh's Spirit are Yahweh's sons. For you did not receive a spirit of slavery to bring you back again into fear. On the contrary, you received the Spirit who makes us sons, and by whose power we cry out, Abba, that is, dear Father. The Spirit himself bears witness with our own spirits that we are children of Yahweh Elohim. And if we are children, then we are also heirs, heirs of Yahweh Elohim, and joint heirs with the Messiah, Yeshua, provided we are suffering with him in order also to be glorified with him. I don't think the sufferings we are going through now are even worth comparing with the glory that will be revealed to us in the future. The creation waits eagerly for the sons of Yahweh to be revealed. For the creation was made subject to frustration, not willingly, but because of the one who subjected it. But it was given a reliable hope that it too would be set free from its bondage of decay and would enjoy the freedom accompanying the glory that Yahweh's children will have. We know that until now, the whole creation has been groaning as with the pains of childbirth. And not only it, but we ourselves, who have the first fruits of the Spirit, grown inwardly as we continue waiting eagerly to be made sons, that is, to have our whole bodies redeemed and set free. It was in this hope that we were saved. But if we see what we hope for, it isn't hope. After all, who hopes for what he already sees? But if we continue hoping for something we don't see, then we still wait eagerly for it with perseverance. Similarly, the Spirit helps us in our weakness, for we don't know how to pray the way we should. But the Spirit himself pleads on our behalf with groanings too deep for words. And the one who searches hearts knows exactly what the Spirit is thinking, because his pleadings for Yahweh's people accords with Yahweh's will. Furthermore, we know that Yahweh causes everything to work together for the good of those who love Yahweh and are called in accordance with his purpose, because those whom he knew in advance, he also determined in advance would be conformed to the pattern of his Son, so that he might be the firstborn among many brothers. So that he might be the firstborn among many brothers. And those whom he thus determined in advance, he also called. And those whom he called, he also caused to be considered righteous. And those whom he caused to be considered righteous, he also glorified. What then are we to say to these things? If Yahweh is for us, who can be against us? He who did not spare even his own son, but gave him up on behalf of us all, is it possible that, having given us his son, he would not give us everything else too? So who will bring a charge against Yahweh's chosen people? Certainly not Yahweh. He is the one who causes them to be considered righteous. Who punishes them? Certainly not the Messiah, Yeshua, who died and, more than that, has been raised, is at the right hand of Yahweh, and is actually pleading on our behalf. Who will separate us from the love of the Messiah? Trouble? Hardship? Persecution? Hunger? Poverty? Danger? War? As the Tanakh puts it, for your sake, we are being put to death all day long. We are considered sheep to be slaughtered. No. In all these things, we are super conquerors through the one who has loved us. For I am convinced that neither death nor life, neither angels nor other heavenly rulers, neither what exists nor what is coming, neither powers above nor powers below, nor any other created thing will be able to separate us from the love of Yahweh, which comes to us through the Messiah, Yeshua HaMashiach. I am speaking the truth as one who belongs to the Messiah. I do not lie, and also bearing witness is my conscience, governed by the Ruach HaKodesh. My grief is so great, the pain in my heart so constant, that I could wish myself actually under Yahweh's curse and separated from the Messiah if it would help my brothers, my own flesh and blood, the people of Yisrael. They were made Yahweh's children. The Shekinah has been with them. The covenants are theirs. Likewise, the giving of the Torah, the temple service, and the promises. The patriarchs are theirs, and from them, as far as the physical descent is concerned, came the Messiah, who is over all. Praise be Adonai, Yahweh Elohim, forever. So be it. Amen. But the present condition of Israel does not mean that the word of Yahweh has failed. For not everyone from Israel is truly part of Israel. Indeed, not all the descendants are seed of Abraham. Rather, what is to be called your seed will be in Yitzhak. In other words, it is not the physical children who are children of Yahweh, but the children the promise refers to who are considered seed. For this is what the promise said: at the time set, I will come, and Sarah will have a son. And even more to the point is the case of Rivka. For both her children were conceived in a single act with Yitzhak, our father. And before they were born, before they had done anything at all, either good or bad, so that Yahweh's plan might remain a matter of his sovereign choice, not dependent on what they did, but on Yahweh, who does the calling. It was said to her, the older will serve the younger. This accords with where it is written, Yaakov I love, but Esau I hated. So are we to say it is unjust for Yahweh to do this? Heaven forbid. For to Moshe he says, I will have mercy on whom I will have mercy, and I will pity whom I will pity, whom I pity. Thus, it doesn't depend on human desires or efforts, but on Yahweh, who has mercy. For the Tanakh says to Pharaoh, it is for this very reason that I raised you up, so that in connection with you I might demonstrate my power, so that my name might be known throughout the world. So then, he has mercy on whom he wants, and he hardens whom he wants. But you will say to me, then why does he still find fault with us? After all, who resists his will? Who are you, a mere human being, to talk back to Yahweh? Will what is formed say to him who formed it, why did you make me this way? Or has the potter no right to make from a given lump of clay this pot for honorable use and that one for dishonorable? Now what if Yahweh, even though he was quite willing to demonstrate his anger and make known his power, patiently put up with people who deserved punishment and were ripe for destruction? What if he did this in order to make known the riches of his glory to those who are the objects of his mercy, whom he prepared in advance for glory, that is, to us whom he called not only from among the Jews, but also from among the Gentiles? As indeed he says in Hosea, those who were not my people, I will call my people. Her who was not my love, I will call loved. And in the very place where they were told, you are not my people, there they will be called sons of the living Elohim. But Yeshayahu, referring to Yisrael, cries out, even if the number of people in Israel is as large as the number of grains of sand by the sea, only a remnant will be saved. For Adonai will fulfill his word on the earth with certainty and without delay. Also, as Yeshayahu said earlier, if Adonai Tzavaot had not left us a seed, we would have become like Sodom. We would have resembled Gomorrah. So, what are we to say? This, that Gentiles, even though they were not striving for righteousness, have obtained righteousness, but it is a righteousness grounded in trusting. However, Yisrael, even though they kept pursuing a Torah that offers righteousness, did not reach what the Torah offers. Why? Because they did not pursue righteousness as being grounded in trusting, but as if it were grounded in doing legalistic works. They stumbled over the stone that makes people stumble. As the Tanakh puts it, "Look, I am laying in Zion a stone that will make people stumble, a rock that will trip them up, but he who rests his trust on it will not be humiliated." Brothers, my heart's deepest desire and my prayer to Yahweh for Israel is for their salvation, for I can testify to their zeal for Yahweh, but it is not based on correct understanding. For since they are unaware of Yahweh's way of making people righteous and instead seek to set up their own, they have not submitted themselves to Yahweh's way of making people righteous. For the goal at which the Torah aims is the Messiah, who offers righteousness to everyone who trusts. For Moshe writes about the righteousness grounded in the Torah, that the person who does these things will attain life through them. Moreover, the righteousness grounded in trusting says, "Do not say in your heart, 'Who will ascend to heaven?'" That is, to bring the Messiah down. Or, "Who will descend into Sheol?" That is, to bring the Messiah up from the dead. What then does it say? The word is near you, in your mouth and in your heart. That is the word about trust, which we proclaim, namely, that if you acknowledge publicly with your mouth that Yeshua is HaMashiach and trust in your heart that Yahweh raised him from the dead, you will be delivered. For with the heart one goes on trusting and thus continues toward righteousness, while with the mouth one keeps on making public acknowledgement and thus continues toward deliverance. For the passage quoted says that everyone who rests his trust on him will not be humiliated. That means that there is no difference between Jew and Gentile. Adonai is the same for everyone, rich toward everyone who calls on him, since everyone who calls on the name of Yahweh Elohim will be delivered. But how can they call on someone if they haven't trusted in him? And how can they trust in someone if they haven't heard about him? And how can they hear about someone if no one is proclaiming him? And how can people proclaim him unless Yahweh sends them? As the Tanakh puts it, "How beautiful are the feet of those announcing good news about good things." The problem is that they haven't all paid attention to the good news and obeyed it. For Yeshayahu says, "Adonai, who has trusted what he has heard from us." So trust comes from what is heard. And what is heard comes through a word proclaimed about the Messiah. But I say, isn't it rather that I didn't hear? No, they did hear. Their voice has gone out throughout the whole world and their words to the ends of the earth. But I say, isn't it rather that Israel didn't understand? I will provoke you to jealousy over a non-nation, over a nation void of understanding. I will make you angry. Moreover, Yeshayahu boldly says, "I was found by those who were not looking for me. I became known to those who did not ask for me." But to Yisrael, he says, all day long, I held out my hands to a people who kept disobeying and contradicting. In that case, I say, isn't it that Yahweh had repudiated his people? Heaven forbid. For I myself am a son of Israel, from the seed of Abraham, of the tribe of Benjamin. Yahweh has not repudiated his people whom he chose in advance. Or don't you know what the Tanakh says about Eliyahu? He pleads with Yahweh against Israel. Adonai, they have killed your prophets and torn down your altars, and I'm the only one left, and now they want to kill me too. But what is Yahweh's answer to him? I have kept for myself 7,000 men and have not that who have not knelt before Baal. It's the same way in the present age. There is a remnant chosen by grace. Now, if it is by grace, it is accordingly not based on legalistic works. If it were otherwise, grace would no longer be grace. What follows is that Israel has not attained the goal for which she is striving. The ones chosen have obtained it, but the rest have been made stone-like, just as the Tanakh says. Yahweh has given them a spirit of dullness, eyes that do not see, and ears that do not hear, right down to the present day. And David says, let their dining table become for them a snare and a trap, a pitfall and a punishment. Let their eyes be darkened so that they can't see, with their backs bent continually. In that case, I say, isn't it that they have stumbled with the result that they have permanently fallen away? Heaven forbid. Quite the contrary. It is by means of their stumbling that the deliverance has come to the Gentiles in order to provoke them to jealousy. Moreover, if their stumbling is bringing riches to the world, that is, if Israel's being placed temporarily in a condition less favored than that of the Gentiles is bringing riches to the latter, how much greater riches will Israel in its fullness bring them? However, to those of you who are Gentiles, I say this. Since I myself am an emissary sent to the Gentiles, I make known the importance of my work in the hope that somehow I may provoke some of my own people to jealousy and save some of them. For if their casting Yeshua aside means reconciliation for the world, what will their accepting him mean? It will be life from the dead. Now if the challah offered as first fruits is holy, so is the whole loaf. And if the root is holy, so are the branches. But if some of the branches were broken off, and you, a wild olive, were grafted in among them and have become equal shares in the rich root of the olive tree, then don't boast as if you were better than the branches. However, if you do boast, remember that you are not supporting the root. The root is supporting you. So you will say, branches were broken off so that I might be grafted in. True, but so what? They were broken off because of their lack of trust. However, you keep your place only because of your trust. So don't be arrogant. On the contrary, be terrified. For if Yahweh did not spare the natural branches, he certainly won't spare you. So take a good look at Yahweh's kindness and his severity. On the one hand, severity toward those who fell off. But on the other hand, Yahweh's kindness toward you, provided you maintain yourself in that kindness. Otherwise, you too will be cut off. Moreover, the others, if they do not persist in their lack of trust, will be grafted in, because Yahweh is able to graft them back in. For if you were cut out of what is by nature a wild olive tree and grafted, contrary to nature, into a cultivated olive tree, how much more will these natural branches be grafted back into their own olive tree? For brothers, I want you to understand this truth, which Yahweh formerly concealed, but has now revealed, so that you won't imagine you know more than you actually do. It is that stoniness to a degree has come upon Israel until the Gentile world enters in its fullness, and that it is in this way that all Israel will be saved. As the Tanakh says, out of Zion will come the Redeemer. He will turn away ungodliness from Yaakov, and this will be my covenant with them when I take away their sins. With respect to the good news, they are hating.